Hello, and welcome to another episode of In Focus. Recently, I was lucky enough to catch up with Anthony Carter again. Anthony is a writer and mentor from California. I started by asking him about his latest book, which is called Ask the Old Guy.
Ask the Old Guy was a response that I've had to getting older in a culture that is not too excited about people getting older. It's my take on what it takes to both reinvent, to love yourself, to come up with different ways to be in the world as you age, particularly as it comes from a perspective of being an older man who's Black and gay and married and really believes that his best years are ahead of him.
So the cover of the book, it shows a barber shop. It's an old photograph. Why did you choose that cover?
I chose the cover for the book, which is a photograph of Black men. It looks like it's in the 20s or 30s who are in a barbershop. And I know for a fact that barbershops, grooming, particularly in the Black community, many times are places for renewal. They're places for connection. They're places where you learn a lot about how different ways to be in the world. They're also places where you create, maintain, affirm relationships. Most of the good times I remember having with my dad growing up were around us going to the barbershop together. And I really like that photo because it looks as if there are some people in a barbershop in Harlem where I actually lived for about 10 or 12 years, many years ago.
And what I like about the cover is there's the barber with a customer cutting his hair. But then outside the window, there's a man walking past. He's looking into the shop. And it just looks like he possibly might pop in for some advice from the barber. Do you think?
Yes, that's kind of that was one of the reasons that drew me to the actual photo. It's there are people on the inside, you know, having the haircut, socializing, chatting with each other, and there's a large window where there's somebody looking in, and it looks as if the person who's looking in might go in for a haircut. They might go in just to say hello. They might stop by for some advice about a personal problem they're dealing with. When I lived in Harlem many years ago, people would stop by the barbershop, different barbershops, for all those reasons. It wasn't necessarily just a place to get your hair cut. It was more like a watering hole where you could get information from people who are older, or information or a perspective on life from people who had lived longer than you had.
So looking at the contents page, there's some very interesting titles. Men Refusing Domination, The High Cost of Being Right, Let's Stop Calling Men Stupid, What 50 Years of Compassionate Impatience Can Get You, How to Get Financially Fit at 50. So what were you trying to accomplish when you wrote this book?
I think when I started writing the book, I was 49. So I'm looking at it in terms of, okay, now I'm 50. I probably don't have another 50 years ahead of me. So what am I going to do the next, let's say, 30 or 40 years? And how do I want to show up in the world? What do I want of money? It was also written for younger people to remind them that, hey, there are people that have been here longer than you who will have a different approach to life. And it might be a good idea to ask some of the older people in your life, you know, how would I handle this? What is your perspective on this? One of the big themes is really looking at your finances and looking at what you've done, what you'd like to do, cleaning up bad mistakes, cleaning up things that are affecting you negatively, and then making some decisions about what do I want to do next and what does it look like in terms of, you know, for example, I went to Greece for 2 weeks. Well, that took some planning. I didn't just jump up and go. So I had to look at my finances and look at, can I actually afford to be away from my job for 2 weeks? And what would that look like? And who would that affect? So for me, a lot of a big portion of aging and getting older is really looking at your finances and hopefully not making the same decisions you made in your 20s or 30s and realizing that, okay, the decisions that I make now, while they might be fun, it might be easy, they have some long-term effects. So maybe it's not a good idea to charge up a bunch of credit cards. It's not a good idea to, go to a trip just because go on a trip because it's free or it looks like it's free and somebody says, come stay with me, and then you come back and maybe you don't have a job. Or you spend all this money on this trip and now you can't handle some basic things that you need to handle.
One of the chapters is called 50 Ain't Dead.
I guess it's sort of thumbing my nose and tipping my hat to the old timers like myself who, we still have our stuff. We want to use up all of our stuff before we go. And I think by the time, well, I know for a fact that by the time I turn 50, and it seems to be across the board, by the time you turn 50, you pretty much, you're still learning. Hopefully you're still curious, but you also know what you're willing to do, what you're willing to put up with. I was telling a friend yesterday and the day before, at 50, you just don't suffer fools gladly anymore. You realize how precious time is and how you want to use it. So part of 50 and Dead is all about it's not over. It's not over till they put you in the pine box. It's not over because hopefully, like I say, you gain enough skills and experiences and you know how to approach things in a way that you move through things faster and you also get to dictate where you want to spend your time and with whom, and why you want to spend your time doing certain things.
Yes, we do get to 50, and there is a sense that we can't be bothered with any of the nonsense anymore.
That's true.
The other thing is we want to help younger men to avoid making the same mistakes that we did.
Yes.
So one of your chapters is called Ask the Old Guy Speaks to His 20-something Self.
I wrote that and I looked at it and I thought, well, what would I tell myself, and at 20 and 25, but all the while knowing whatever I would tell myself, I probably wouldn't listen. And that's part of, I think that's part of being younger is that, you have all this energy and enthusiasm, and a lot of times, not a whole lot of planning goes into what you're doing or not doing. So when I look at what I would tell my 20-year-old self, like the essay mentions, I would look at, okay, what did I most need to hear at that point, and what would I have been most likely to hear or let in? One of the really great things about when I look back in those years, and I was 20, 23, 25, is that I wisely, I don't know how I figured this out, but I wisely surrounded myself with a lot of older people. So all of my friends were 5, 10, 15, 20 years older than me. So I had a lot of guidance and a whole lot of pointing me in different directions and saying, no, you're not going to be an idiot and do X, Y, and Z. This would be a better choice for you. And many times, sometimes I listened, and I got a certain result. Many times I didn't. And then I had to figure out, okay, well, that didn't work. Why didn't that work? So luckily, I had people around who, in addition to offering advice and insight, would let me skin my knees, fall on my face, and then say, okay, well, let's look at why you did that. And let's look at whether or not that's an experience you want to recreate. And if it is, by all means, keep doing what you did or doing what you've done, or say, okay, that's not, it's an experience, chalk it up as an experience. And what do we need to do to make sure we have a different experience the next time?
So, chapter 13, let's stop calling men stupid. Why do we call men stupid?
That is a good question. I don't know why. So let's stop calling men stupid. One, I think it's a great title. Two, I think it is an opportunity to look at men in terms of their relationship to power. Many times I feel that I've been around or witnessed men who are in positions of power, whether it's real or not, perceived real or not, I've witnessed men in positions of power, and they behave a certain way or do certain things. And I think a lot of times we see men represented, particularly on TV and the media, as not being very bright. We see that a lot of times on sitcoms and a lot of movies where they react, they have men reacting but not thinking or not thinking things through. And it's kind of like, well, isn't this funny? Isn't this comedic? And, I guess it could be. And sometimes it is. But I think there's a way there is. A way that men get let off the hook when they do certain things. Or people just saying, well, that's just that person being a man, or that's just what men do, as opposed to really challenging them and saying, okay, let's think this decision through. Let's think about things before we hit the launch button. So that's kind of why I wrote that. That's the reason that I wrote that essay, was that not only should we not let men off the hook, but we should encourage them and support them when they're not reactionary. And I think a lot of times in this culture, we support and expect men to be reactionary. So it's kind of a catch-22 in that we support that kind of behavior, but then when we do it, we're called stupid and non-thinking and insensitive, you know? So it's kind of like we need to figure out as a culture, and as a culture at large, how to support men to think and behave differently.
So you're talking about all men there, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm talking about men in general, yes.
But as well as that, have you found that there has been a tendency for society to assume that gay men are stupid?
I think the tendency is for, there's a different, we get a different set of isms, a different set of pathologies as gay men. And I think the assumption many times of gay men is, I don't know if it's so much that we're stupid, but I think it's a lot of times as gay men is that, my experience has been the assumption is we're oversexed and we're shallow and don't think about things, which is another version of being stupid, you know?
Trivial.
But yeah, it shows up in a different way, you know, and I think a lot of times with gay men, the assumption is that, yeah, that's the assumption, is that we, the hypersexuality, the perception of hypersexuality, along with the perception of being super shallow and not having, you know, any long-term plans, because the assumption has been, because you're not having long-term relationships and raising children and doing the things in this culture that say this is what adults do, the assumption is, well, since you are not burdened with that, and I will say, use the word burden, since you're not burdened with that, you have a lot of time to just be frivolous and not think about things, which is really untrue, because a lot of the movements, a lot of the things that, a lot of the cultural shifts that have changed the planet and changed the world many times have come from the LGBTQ community. So I don't know where that thinking, I don't know where a lot of those assumptions are coming from. Because I've read and witnessed and been around people where it's been the complete opposite of that. You know, where they do some serious thinking and some serious execution on what they believe in and the changes they want to see, the changes that we want to see. So I've seen a lot of contradictions with that thinking. Let me put it that way.
I've had a few conversations and I've said most gay men are over 40, and I've had an outraged response to that. We have this society that's, especially in the gay community, that's completely focused on being under 35.
Yes, which is, like I say, another reason for writing the book. I think, you know, we have, and I don't think it's just gay culture. I think, I don't know about there in England and the world and around the world, but I know in America we have an obsession on youth. So it's not, once you add the gay portion to it, or the gay aspect to it, it gets heightened. So it's worse. It seems like it's worse, because not only do we have an obsession on youth in this culture, but if you're a gay male, I don't know so much about, I don't know if this is the case with women, but I know that with gay men, yes, being over 30 is a crime. And it's almost like, okay, you've done something wrong. And the funny thing about it is, when I was younger, I felt that way. You know, I remember being 23 and older men would approach me, you know, who were my dad's age. And I thought, oh, no, you know, I don't know that, you know, but I don't know if it was more so that they were older or that they were the fact that they were my dad's age. But I was 23 and 24 when this was going on. And as I started to get older, I realized almost the ridiculousness of that and how, like, just pointless that was. And especially considering the fact that, You know, I mean, I think it's some, there's something to be said to be 40, to be 50, to have lived through the changes and the things we've seen and the, you know, especially anybody who's lived through the 80s, you know, 70s, 80s. I love talking to older men who have, you know, who are in their 60s or 70s because the world was very different. You know, you didn't come, you know, you didn't come out at 18, you know, in 1974. You just didn't do that. And so I'm always interested in talking to older men, particularly older gay men, about how they not only survived that whole process, but how did they thrive? Like, how did you not get taken down? What were your tips? What were your keys to build your inner resolve, to build resistance so that you kept going? You know, not knowing whether or not, quote unquote, your day would ever come. I mean, there are things that we experience now. You know, with gay marriage and a bunch of other things that are going on, that I would have never, that when I was 14 in 1982, it was so far removed from my thinking that I would have never assumed I would have the life that I'm having now. You know, so my think my obsession was talking to older men and in particular older gay men. It's like, okay, what kept you going? So I think a lot of when you talk about younger people and young men who, oh my God, 30 and 35 is so awful. It's like, well, no, you keep going, you know. And there's something to be had for getting to the other side of 30, getting to the other side of 40. And I personally believe it only gets better. You know, my 40s were absolutely phenomenal in terms of what I was able to figure out and do, and actually just, you know, launch and complete and figure out. What do I really want to do without the added pressure of, you know, what is society going to say? What are my parents going to say? It's kind of by the time you're in your 40s, you're kind of done with all of that, you know. So I tell anybody who's 30, I tell, you know, I have a lot of, I'm actually a lot of around a lot of people who are in their early 20s, mid 20s, and I tell them the same thing all the time. Just keep going, just keep living. You know, a lot of this will make sense. You know, as you age, and a lot of things you really will find out are you really don't want to be bothered with. It is a lot of things you'll find out are total colossal waste of time. And you'll just decide, no, don't want to do that.
It is difficult once you turn 50, trying to decide what you should wear because you don't want to look ridiculous dressing like a 20-year-old. But on the other hand,
Right.
people 40 years ago just seemed to look a lot older, didn't they?
Yeah. I think the but the perception was that, you know, 40, 50, 60 was older then. You know, I look at pictures of, you know, sometimes I'll watch a TV show and the people on the TV show will be in their 60s, and this may be a show that was out in the 80s, and they looked like older people. And now you see people who are in their 50s and 60s who, you know, don't necessarily. You can tell they're not 20, you know what I mean? But they're also not trying to dress like they're 20 either. Like there's a huge, I don't know if it's a movement or whatever, but there's this huge thing on YouTube where they have people giving people tips on being in your 40s and 50s and dressing. Dressing well and being very sexy and still being very present and still being very much visible, but not being ridiculous. You know, you have to make some shifts because you're not a kid anymore, you know. So you make shifts and you figure out how do I want, like this guy told me at this gym once, who was a trainer, who was working with a trainer, and he talked about how you age gracefully, you know, like a fine wine, so that it's not a big shock and it's not. Not a big, oh, nominal person. It's more along the lines of, yeah, I'm aging and I'm, you know, and I'm graciously and tastefully kind of fighting it all along the way. Like I'm accepting that this is going on, but I don't have to be dour. I don't have to be, you know, with the pants up to the chest and, you know, stooped over waiting to die, you know, because that's no fun.
You do like your provocative headlines in the chapters. You've got one called 50 Ain't Dead, The High Cost of Being Right, Men Refusing Domination, How to Make a Sizzling Comeback. So why do we want to make a sizzling comeback? Is that after 50?
You get to a point in your life when a lot of the things you thought were true aren't. A lot of the things you spent time chasing and going after and trying to control, you quickly figure out that those things are a waste of time. You also figure out you have all these skills and abilities and life experience, and you're kind of, many times you find yourself in a rut. So it becomes imperative that you make some kind of comeback or make some kind of reinvention. And you just decide, okay, I've been doing things this way for a long time. Not only do I no longer have to do it that way, but I don't feel compelled to do things the way I've always done them. You know, and you start making changes. And many times, you know, the world, the people in your life, your loved ones will say, well, don't do that. You know, don't rock the boat. You know, you've got a good thing going here. Or, you know, yeah, stay at this job or stay in this marriage or keep doing things the way you're doing. And you know, in your heart of hearts, you don't want to do that anymore. And I think so. To me, you start talking about making a sizzling comeback. I think it's imperative that everybody do that at some point. Some people do it younger. I think by the time you're of age and you're in your 50s and you're making a comeback, you know exactly why you're doing it. And you know, if you don't know what you need to do to make it, you know how to find the people that can help you get clear about what you need to do to make a comeback.
One chapter is called Men Refusing Domination. Tell me about that.
Men Refusing Domination is all about getting men to think and behave in new and exciting ways. It's also about getting the culture at large, meaning men and women, inviting the culture to support men in doing things differently. What I mean by doing things differently is not being afraid to ask for help, not being afraid to say, I don't know something, and not feeling compelled to know absolutely everything. And it's a new way of listening and interacting with other people.
So what's next for Anthony Carter?
More writing. I'm in the process of moving into screenwriting and writing for TV. Continuing to find ways for older men to contribute to the culture and society at large. That's pretty much it. Just kind of more of the same and looking for new challenges and ways to continue to be bold and create expressive, exciting work.
Tell people where they can download a copy of Ask the Old Guy.
You can download a copy of Ask the Old Guy at my website, which is my name, Anthony, Anthony-Carter, C as in cat, ARTER.com. Pick up your copy today.
Thanks very much, Anthony. Always lovely to talk with you.
Thank you.